We're holding on Yud Amud Aleph, the fourth line from the top. We're in the middle of discussing. We brought up a point yesterday that the first Mishnah we had said that Beit Shammai was being makel on doing something which can involve Isurim de Rabbanan, such as taking a hole, even though you don't really need the hole itself, or handling the dirt, which is mukta, etc., for the sake of Simchas Yomtov, for the sake of being able to shech an animal and cover its blood on Yomtov. And we said the silver was machmir. On the other hand, in the rest of the parak, we seem to be having the other way around. But in our Mishnah and in the next few Mishnahs, the silver are the ones being makel, as they usually are. So we started discussing the issue. So what is it? Is Beit Shammai takes it as a general rule or makel in things that are banan for the sake of Simchas Yomtov and Bitzil is Machmir? Well, then how come those all the other Mishnayos the other way around? So we started going through. We had a statement by Rabbi Yochanan that Mechulefet Hashita, that something has to be switched around. Either according to Rashi, each of these Mishnayos in turn, the Gemara goes through figuring out whether it has to be switched around. Or according to Tosfos, the first Mishnah, the one about the Shechita and the covering the blood. So we went through two of them so far. We went through our Mishnah, and we went through the next Mishnah, which we'll learn today, about according to Beit Shammai, you're only allowed to take birds out of the birdhouse if you pick them up before Yom Tov to make them mukhan, whereas according to Beit Shammai, you only have to verbally designate them. So we went through those two, and we said in each of those cases, not necessarily as a contradiction, in each of those cases, you could say Beit Shammai had a special reason why to be matir the Kisei Adam, because you already had a spade stuck into the ground, and we dealt with all the different dirabanan that are set aside that you don't have to worry about. The spade's already in the ground, so there's no issue of mukta, and therefore there's no issue of digging either, and the issue of making a pit is not an issue because the dirt is loose, etc. Whereas with each of these other cases, Beit Shammai has more of a reason to be machmir. In the case of the latter, we said because people may think you're going to fix your roof. And in the case of the birds, because you may change your mind, which we'll talk about more in the Mishnah and the Gemara on it. And conversely, Beit Shammai may have more reason to be machmir over there because they're concerned about that you may end up crushing the dirt to cover the blood. Whereas in each of these cases, they have less reason to worry about. In the case of the latter, because people know you're going to take it to a birdhouse, and in the case of picking up the birds, because once you designated them, then already they're not mukta. So Ela I kasha. So no, if you have a kasha, a contradiction between Mishnayos and the Perek, ha kasha, then the question is in the following. That Beit Shammai the next Mishnah after which we'll get to tomorrow. Beit Shammai Omrim Ein Noitlanas Eli L'Katzav Al Basar. Beit Shammai says you're not allowed to take an Eli. An Eli is a big heavy piece of wood. Normally it's used to grind to crush wheat. When you're making, for example, in those days, they'd take wheat and break wheat kernels and use a heavy piece of wood like this, like a pestle and a mortar, to break up the wheat, to break up the grains into smaller pieces. We learned about in Brachas, for example, that they had chilka, where each one was divided in two, or targis, where it's divided in three, and tres is three, targis is four, etc. There were different qualities of it, depending on how finely each grain was divided up. It came out, I guess, something like tarful or something like that, and they'd use it in stews and soups and things like that. So normally this thing is only used for breaking up wheat kernels like that, which means it's mukta on yamtiv. It's a klisha malachta l'iser. So therefore, Beit Shammai is saying you're not allowed to take this eli for a different purpose, the kasa of alabasa, to use it as a cutting board for meat, or basil matirin, whereas basil will say it's mukta. Alma gabe simchas yomtiv b'shamer l'chomer b'tzil l'kulas. We see when it comes to simchas yomtiv, to enhancing your yomtiv, that you should be able to have meat by your table, and therefore you need a cutting board to cut it on. So b'shamer is being machmir, which at this point we're assuming is because they're being machmir on a matter of mukta, and b'sol is being mekel. Urimini ashechet chayvayt b'shamer l'chola. And again, we have going back to the case of the shchita and the kisei adam, where we said b'shamer is mekel. So therefore, so on that maybe is what Rabbi Yochanan said, that we have to flip it around to make what Beit Shammai says either this Mishnah according to Rashi or the original Mishnah according to Tosfos. However, the Gemara says again, Mimai, who says? Dilma Lahi, maybe not. Maybe you don't have to flip around either one. Again, Ad Kan Lakami Vishama Hosmala Hecha de Ika Deker notes. Again, over there, in the case of the Kisi Adam, you already have a spade stuck into the ground. So again, therefore, all the various Dirabanans are dealt with. Aval Hecha de Lecha Deker notes, but where there's no Deker notes, then no. And in this case, there is a Issa Dirabanan involved, namely that the Eli is not is a Keli that's Musa. Or, inami, ad kan lekame b'shilol ocha, or conversely, you can say that why is b'shilol being makel over here in this case of the Eli, el hecha di ela di ikat teretz kli alav, because they're arguing to b'shama, you want to say it's mukta. True, it's mukta. But it's not mukta in the same way as, for example, dirt or stones or things like that, which are a very serious kind of mukta called kli shemala, called mukta machlas gufay, where the thing has no, it's not a keli at all, it has no intrinsic use. On Yom Tov or on Shabbos, unless you designated it for that ahead of time. This Eli, it is a Keli. Unlike we talked about yesterday, a ladder, for example, does not have Tardas Keli. It doesn't have the form or the function of a utensil. The Eli does. Because you use it as a Keli, yeah. So therefore, in that case, yes, it's Mukta, but in that case, the usual rules of Mukta apply, where a Keli, which is Mukta, because Klisha Malachta L'Issu, because it's used for something which is normally not allowed to be done on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, but you are allowed to move it, let's say, Gufay and let's say, Lekoyma. You're allowed to use to move it when you need it for itself, namely, you're using it for purposes which is Mutter, as the example that the Mishnah had mentioned in Shabbos, for example, using a hammer on Shabbos to crack nuts. Where the hammer itself is a klisha malachta l'isur, but you're allowed to use it to crack nuts, or l'tzorach makayma, where you need the place of it. For example, the Eli is in the way, and you need to move it anyway. So then you're allowed to move it for that purpose. So in that case, then yeah, go ahead and use it as a cutting board. Right. Aval hasam loy, but in the case of kisi adam, where there's dirt involved, which dirt is first of all is mukta machmas gufay, and second of all, more to the point, there was the issue of crushing it. Where again, even though we're talking about the offer to chayach, loose dirt, still Basil is concerned that as you're digging, you're going to bring up a clod of dirt, and then you're going to forget and crush it, which would be an issur of teichin.
Here we say even though we crush with the eli, still it's more.
No, but you're not doing crushing right now. Right now, you're only using the eli as a cutting board. Yeah. So then, Aval Hasam Loi. So maybe over there they would say not. So there's still no contradiction. The Pnei Yeshua, by the way, has a long, interesting discussion about this whole Gemara, where it's going through Mishnah by Mishnah and pointing out the difference. He points. He says each one, the Gemara is pointing out there's a different factor involved, which makes us think that maybe Veshama and that maybe we need to flip around in order to make Veshama and the solo match. And in the end, we say that no, that factor doesn't exist. For example, in this case of the Eli, he says that. One way of looking at it might indeed be to say that the Eli is mukta machmas gufay, and in that case, even Beis Hillel shouldn't be allowing you to move it. And the only way we could say that they would allow you to move it is if they're being consistent by saying you're also allowed to dig for dirt for kisi adam. Whereas in the end, we say no. After all, it is a keli, so therefore Beis Hillel has reason to be makel on those grounds,
as opposed to
kisi adam. Yeah. Eli.
This one thing is a carry in my room. The other thing is action.
No, they're both actions. No, the difference is that in the case of Kisi Adam, the problem is that Basil is saying that when you dig, when you even if you have a spade stuck into the ground before Yom Tov, you're digging now for dirt to do Kisi Adam, but not necessarily is all the dirt going to be loose dirt. Some of it might be compacted. Some of it might be clods of dirt, and you're going to end up crushing him. And that would be an isser. That would actually be a malacha of teichin. Yeah. So for that reason, they're being machmir over there. Whereas over here, all those possible is a matter of mukta. And besides which, anyway, they're saying it's not even such an issue of mukta because after all, it's a keli. It's a keli shemalach to isser. So you can't just move it willy nilly, and you can't just move it, for example, just mechamel itself, as the Gemara calls it in Shabbos, where for example it's someplace where it's going to get damaged, and you're moving it to prevent it from getting damaged. You're not allowed to do that. But you are allowed to move it when you need it for something else, for a different use, which is mutter on Yom Tov, such as cutting up meat. Yeah. Ella,
can you use it to soften meat?
To pound the meat? I can't think why not, but I don't know. I don't know that you use an Eli for that purpose, though. I mean, maybe. I suppose you could. Yeah, I suppose they use wooden hammers or something like that to tenderize meat. Can then? I don't know. Ella e kasha. So no, rather if you have kasha, if you have a contradiction between the Shnayas and our Perek, ha kasha, then you have to go to the next Mishnah after that. B'shama Omrim Ein Nosin Es Ha'ola Pnei Ador Son. B'shama says that after you shecht an animal on Yom Tov and you strip off the skin, you're not allowed to put the skin down where people are going to step on it. The first stage of tanning leather is you need people to step on it, to trample it, in order to harden it, to stiffen it. So then they're saying you're not allowed to do that because it would be a matter of ibud, of ma'abid, which is one of ma'abid of tanning leather, which is one of the malachas on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And the loyag vihenu, when they say you're not even allowed to pick up the skin, elim ken yeshol of kazayis balsa, unless there was at least a kazayis of meat on it. Because if there's a kazayis of meat, you can consider the skin is like a handle for the meat. This comes up in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara also, that the skin is considered like a handle for the meat. But if you have less than a kazayis of meat on it, then the skin itself has no possible use on Yom Tov. So therefore, they're saying it's mukta. Or v'silu matirin, where v'silu say it's mukta. And again, what are we assuming? That the assumption at this point is why is Bisil being matir? They're saying, fine, we agree with you, Bishamai, there is the same problem of Ma'abed and there is the same problem of Muksa. But we want to be lenient on it, because otherwise, if a person is not allowed to do that, he's not going to want to lose the skin. It's a valuable thing. And if he waits till after Yom Tov, it might spoil. So therefore, if you don't allow him to do something with the skin to preserve it, then he won't end up shechting the animal at all, and then he loses out on a Simchas Yom Tov.
Rashi
says that's what the assumption is at this point in the discussion. So again, we see when it comes to Simchas Yom Tov that B'Shama is being machmir and B'Sil is being metal. B'Sil is saying, let's remove any possible impediment to Simchas Yom Tov, and if that involves overriding an Isur D'Rabbanim, so be it, such as Mukta. Whereas B'Shama is saying not. Or Amini Hashechet Chayev Yom Tov, and then we have a contradiction from the case of Shchita, where B'Sil is saying, don't shecht unless you have dirt ready already available, because they're concerned about this problem of crushing it. So you see that B'Sil is machmir. And they're saying, okay, it may happen because of that, you're not going to end up shechting the animal, and you're going to lose out on Simchas Yom Tov. Oh, well. Yeah. So then on that, Rabbi Yochanan Mukhlef is a Shita. So again, now, so we try again. Rabbi Yochanan's answer that one of the Mishnayos has flipped around. And again, the Gemara asks me, "Mai, where do you get that from? Duma lohi, maybe not. Maybe you can find a different way to reconcile them. Ad kam lekamer b'shamay halsam alahecha de'ikah deka notes. Again, in the case of shchita, b'shamay is only talking about when is it mutter because you already have a spade stuck into the ground. So all the various devanans have been dealt with. Avalhecha de'ikah deka notes. Why? But there's no deka notes, such as over here, for example. The fact is the skin is mutter. So then why? So then they're not going to be mapped to it. Because there's no particular ground to be mapped to it on. It's not when it comes to Shchita that they're saying because of Simchas Yom Tov we're going to allow you. They're saying there's no Isur D'Rabbanan there involved anyway because you took care of all the Isur D'Rabbanan by making sure it's loose dirt and the spade is stuck in, etc. So they won't allow, so normally they won't allow things just because of Simchas Yom Tov, but in the case of Shchita and Kisi Adam, where everything has already been taken care of, and the only possibility is what if there's a clod of dirt there, fine, they're not worried about that. Inami, and also, Adkan Lekam B'Sil, Hocha El Adachazi L'Mizga Ilave. Also, you can say about B'Sil, the reason why they're being makel in this case of the skin is not because they're saying, fine, it's only an Isur D'Rabbanan, will override it. It's for a different reason, because the leather, the skin is actually, it does have a function. No, not because it's valuable. It does have a function on Yom Tov. The Chazi L'Mizgalei, it is suitable right now, Ilavei, it is suitable right now on Yom Tov to lean on it, to lay down on it. L'Mizga means to lean on it, yeah. Rashi points out, I mean, in those days they didn't sit on chairs. They used to they'd spread out something on the ground and then they'd sit on that or lean on that like pillows. Yeah. So then on you can do that with a raw skin as well. So therefore,
early had also another
purpose. Exactly. Yeah. Abel Hasam Lai, but in the case of the Kisi Adam, they're not. Yeah. So therefore, you still have no contradiction. Ela I kasha ha kasha. So no, if you have a question, if you have a contradiction between Mishnayos, then it's the following. The next Mishnah in the Perek. Again, we're going in sequence through the Mishnayos. The next one is Vishama Emim Ein Mesalkin Es HaTrisin B'Yom Tov. Vishama says you're not allowed to take down the Trisin, the window shades on Yom Tov. What are we talking about? They used to have in those days, a typical store in those days was made basically like a large wooden box. It had on the front of it, it had a kind of shutter that at nighttime they would use it. They'd put it. You know, there was a window cut out in the box, let's say, you know, for to buy and sell through. During the daytime, they'd take off this shutter and put it down on the inside of the hole and use it as a counter. And at nighttime, they'd pick it up and use it to close up the hole. Yeah. Now, there are certain kinds of things that you are allowed. Now, so you would think, what stores on Yom Tov? I mean, what are you doing buying and selling on Yom Tov anyway? We will learn in the second parak that there are situations where you're allowed to go and get things from a store on Yom Tov. You can't pay money, obviously. Money is mukta. You can't mention specific measurements and things like that. You can't tell them tally up what I owe you from before and add this to my bill, etc. But you can go and you bring along a cup, let's say, and you ask him, please fill up this cup for me, and tomorrow we'll figure out how much this cup holds, and I'll pay you accordingly. And specifically, Rashi says, we're talking about over here stores where they sell spices, which you need for your Yom Tov cooking. So therefore, you can go to a spice dealer like that on Yom Tov and tell him, you know, I just realized I'm making a cholent, and I realize I'm out of pepper. Give me a pinch of pepper or whatever. And after Yom Tov, we'll figure out the amount, and I'll pay you.
How would the Sorana be offered Yom Tov?
That's the thing. He's allowed to, and in fact, for purposes like this, in order to be able to sell to people who need things for Yom Tov, it's a good thing for him too. Yeah.
Do they have some of this in some areas? Work like that?
In those days, apparently they did.
But not today.
Today, I've never heard of such a thing happening, but I don't know. So Bishama says Ein Misalkin is Hatrusin b'Yom Tov. You're not allowed to take down this window shade on Yom Tov to put it down on the counter and start selling things. Or Vasil must have enough to. Vasil says not only are you allowed to take it down, you're even allowed to put it back. Which the point is when taking it down, fine, you need that for Simchas Yom Tov. Putting it back on the face of it, you don't. Why indeed? There is a key point over here that we're dealing with. I mentioned a minute ago that the stores we were talking about were actually made like large wooden boxes. They weren't like modern day stores that are attached to the ground. They were more like, in that sense, they were more like push carts or something. The reason why that's important is because we're talking about, we'll learn in a couple of days when we get to this Mishnah and the Gemara on it, what kind of trist we're talking about, in what way it's attached to the box. But it has like hinges on the sides. It has hinge pins on the sides to be able to fit into holes. If it was a regular brick and mortar store, everybody would agree you can't put that up because it's a matter of binyan. You're adding to a permanent building. But because it's only a wooden box, therefore it's a keli. So actually, we get into the discussion of whether the din of binyan and stira applies to kalim. Now, therefore, Mishamah is saying you can't even take down the tris, because they hold binyan. There is the din of binyan and stira does apply to kalim as well, at least in Abanan. Whereas Vasilo says not only are you allowed to take it down. Now, on the face of it, putting it back is not a matter of Simchas Yom Tov. Once you took it down and sold the spices or whatever it is that you need, what's the putting it back? We'll learn. The Gemara says
so therefore
the Gemara says this is one of those cases called the Tirus Sofen Mishum Tchilasan. The Chachamim allowed you to do the second stage of something because if they don't allow you to, you're not even going to do the first stage. Like in this case, yeah, the person's not going to want to leave the store open for the rest of Yom Tov. They may clean out a stock. So therefore, if you don't allow him to put back the trist, he's not going to want to open in the first place, and therefore people aren't going to be able to buy spices for their Yom Tov meals, and their Yom Tov is going to suffer.
Well, there's no malacha doing this, right?
But that's the thing. That since we're talking about a keli, there's no malacha d'araisa involved,
right.
But there is a malacha d'arabana of binyan estira. Right. So that's the thing. So again, Alma Gabi Simchas Yom Tov B'Shamay L'Chob B'Vasil L'Kolo. So here's where we see that B'Shamay is being machmir when it comes to Simchas Yom Tov. They're saying because this is even though this is a keli and it's only also a drabanan, nevertheless we're not going to allow you to take down the shutter, much less to put it back. and the tefillah is being makel, I'm saying go ahead, you're allowed to take it down for simchas yomtiv, and you're even allowed to put it back because it's shita soif and mishum tefillah, because if we don't allow you to put it back, then you're not going to start in the first place.
No.
And then we have, on the other hand, we have the case of kisei adam. Here's where the real question is. So, Bishlema Bishama Bishama Lekasha. So we can understand why Bishama is not contradicting himself. Hasam de ikadeko notes, hochalaka deko notes, because again, the same idea. When it comes to Kisei Adam, there is a deko note. You've taken care of all the Dabbanon. Here, you have it. Here, there is the matter of the Dabbanon of Binyan Bekalim, of building or taking apart a Kaili on Yomtiv. Ela Bishilo, la Bishilo, Kasha. But you have a problem with Bishilo against Bishilo. In each of the previous cases, we could find some reason for a heter. Everybody can tell that you're taking the ladder to the birdhouse, or the birds are not mukt because you verbally designated them before Yom Tov, or the Eli has another purpose. It's a klisha malachil iser. The leather has another purpose, etc. But here, what possible reason could there be for Bishilo to be makel, except for the fact that they're saying because of Simchas Yom Tov, we're going to set aside a din de rabbanan? So that's a real question. So therefore, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Ruchalat is a shita. So that's where Rabbi Yochanan comes in and says that we have to flip it around. The only way Rabbi Yochanan is saying to reconcile.
The catch thing is that if Bechila wasn't Mekil, the store owner would not do it again.
No. But we're talking, forget about putting it back. Why is Bechila even allowing you to take down the shutter and put it out of the counter? That would be stira. That would be taking apart a keli, which is normally also the rabbanon. So what are you telling me? That here we're saying yes, it's also the rabbanon, but we're going to allow you because otherwise you're not going to have simchas yomtiv. So then why by the case of kisei adam are we all of a sudden worried about an issur de rabbanon?
Here you can talk about spices.
And what spices is not do anything? No, there you want meat for yomtiv. Here you want spices for yomtiv. Either way, it's a matter of simchas yomtiv. But yet, in this case, Bishilo is saying there is something which normally the Rabbanan would ask you to do, to take down a shutter from a wooden box, to take out a shutter or a door or whatever from a wooden box, but we're going to allow it because of Simchas Yomtiv. Well, then why don't they allow you to dig in the loose dirt? And if you, there's a possibility you might have a clod of dirt, okay, why are we worried about possibilities? There's Simchas Yomtiv and shechting the animal. But Bishilo is saying don't shecht unless you have ready-made dirt. No, so that's directly. They're telling you, in other words, if you don't have ready-made loose dirt, do not shecht this animal, because then you'll miss the mitzvah of kisei adam. You're going to lose out on Simchas Yomtiv. Tough luck. And here we're saying that we're allowing something that normally would be aser. Yes, so that's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. B'cholat es hashita. Inami, or on the other hand, maybe we can even answer this one also. Maybe Bishilo hold in this case of the store, there's no problem at all, because they hold that the din of binyan and stira does not even apply to kalim in the first place. In general, Bishilo would hold maybe that you're assuming that everybody agrees there is a problem with putting together and taking apart kalim on Yom Tov. Not necessarily. Maybe not. The store is a wooden box, after all. It's a keli. Maybe Bishilo would say that in that case, there is no issur de rabbanon here in at all. You're allowed to take apart and put together a keli on Yom Tov. Aval ha-chaloi, but again, aval ha-samloi, but again, in the case of kisei adam, not. So therefore, again, you wouldn't have to flip around anything.
Can you say that in the case of kisei adam, you want to destroy a keli in a way?
How are you destroying a keli?
You're not destroying.
No. But that's, yeah. No, there you actually, we were talking about that you're digging up the dirt, and there might be a clod in there, which you're going to crush. Here we're talking about binyan and stira b'kalim. So if Bishilo holds that here there is no issue of binyan and stira, then fine, we're good. That's why they would be after. Now, it seems that Rashi and Tosfos do not have this last line and a half in their version of the Gemara. They leave off that in the end, the Gemara does say that, yes, there is something that in our parak that has to be flipped around. Either the case of the Trisim, according to Rashi, or the case of Kisei Adam, according to Tosfos. They don't have this last line and a half. They don't accept that as an answer. On the other hand, the Ramban, and there are other Rishonim who also seem to say that way. On the other hand, the Ramban does have it, and therefore the Ramban says that based on that, then ultimately we have all the Mishnayos and the Perek are in their proper, or do have their proper wording. We have the first one, Mishama is Meitel, Bissil is Machner, and the first three Machlokasin. In all the other ones, Bissil is Meitel and Mishama is Machner, and there's no contradictions. There are, by the way, there are more Mishnayos in the Perek where Bishama and Bissil argue, but the rest of them, they're actually arguing about Isurim Daraisa. For example, we have one where Bishama argues about what you're allowed to carry outside on Yom Tov. They're saying only food, only Oichel Nefesh, whereas Bissil says, once it's Mutter for food, then it's Mutter for other things as well. But those aren't things Dirabbanan, though, which is what, and Simchas Yom Tov, which is what we're dealing with, so that's why the Gemara doesn't bring them in. Next machlokes. Bishama omrim about the birds in the bird house that we talked about in the previous Mishnah. Once you went and got them, however it is, Bishama is saying, well, you're not allowed to take them on Yom Tov. LMK near number of Ojom, unless you actually pick them up and move them and shook them beforehand. From before Yom Tov.
That's the what is
the bird.
The birds themselves.
Yes. Yeah, it's actually designating them by actually picking them up.
Right.
Or the civil says, no, you can just stand there and say, Zebazani Noito, I'm going to take this bird and that one.
That's Erev Yom Tov. Erev
Yom Tov we're talking about, yeah. Okay. We'll talk about it in the Gemara. That's not going to work on Yom Tov if you do this.
Right.
Yeah. So the Gemara says, Amar of Chonan Ba'ami, Machloikis B'Bricha Rishayna. This Machloikis in the Mishnah is specifically about the first breeding, about the first breeding pair of doves. Namely, it works like this, Rashi says. Doves usually, a pair of doves mate. They build a nest in one of these bird houses or whatever, and then they produce offspring every month throughout the spring and the summer. They stop in the winter, and they spring, the summer, and the fall. They produce a new pair of birds every month. They lay two eggs, and they hatch. And then during the winter they take a break, and the next year they start over as long as the original pair is still fertile. If you ever learned about the Fibonacci sequence as far as breeding of rabbits, it's a similar concept.
Breeding rabbits.
In his case it was rabbits. Yeah. The Fibonacci sequence of numbers. Yeah, where you get quite large very fast. I mean, here you'd have even more. If he had been working with doves instead, he would have had a completely different sequence. Yeah.
Oh, that's partially why the Jupiter compared to
doves. Not as far as I know. One reason why we're compared to doves is because doves are peaceful birds, and there's also because they mate for life, etc. But because they keep on producing young, I don't know. Maybe I've never heard.
Because
they've multiplied a lot.
Right now, the only group that, no matter if they get more education or they don't have as much, are still growing and that are choosing, like every other minority.
Okay, Kenzai. Yeah. Anyway, so now usually what you do is like this. So the mother and father bird have laid two eggs in Nissan time, let's say, and those hatch into two broods. Then they lay another pair in Iyar and another pair in Sivan and so forth. Now, usually the ones that from the rest of the year, fine, you'll take them as you need them. The original pair usually you leave together, you leave in the nest together with the parents, so they have company basically.
The first pair.
So therefore, the machlokes in our Mishnah of Chanan Ba'ami says it's specifically about that first pair. The Bishamai Sabri Gazun and Duma Asulim Lochi. Bishamai then holds that the problem is we make Xero because you might end up changing your mind. You might decide afterwards, you know what, this first pair, usually I keep it here together with the parents. Why am I, if I just verbally designate them before Yom Tov, fine, come Yom Tov, I change my mind. Bishamai Sabri like Gazun. Whereas Bishamai says that we're not Gozer on that.
In other words?
Exactly that. In other words, the Bishamai says once you've verbally designated them, then fine. Then you expect you'll take them.
You cannot change your mind.
Not you can't change your mind, but so there's a few different explanations of what the problem would be if he changes his mind. Rashi says that it means like this: when he takes them, when he picks them up to, let's say before Yom Tov, he only verbally designated them. He comes on Yom Tov to take them. He picks them up. And then he thinks to himself, you know what? I really should leave these with the parents. Well, then he picked them up for no reason. As opposed to if he picked them up beforehand and already he actually went to the trouble of picking them up, it means fine. He's already taken it as a given that he's taking them. Yeah. That's a few different explanations of what the issue would be if he changes his mind. One of the other explanations for in Rishonim is, for example, that he may change his mind if he only verbally designates them. Later on, he may change his mind. So then, fine, the original pair that he verbally designated becomes mukta again. The other one, let's say, that he changed his mind to become the good ones. But then he's going to forget on Yom Tov and take the original ones, which are mukta.
And a brush sheet.
Yeah. There's different explanations. That's another explanation of what the issue is.
When he changes his mind, it becomes mukta.
Yeah. Then there's a different explanation, which is that he may change his mind, and then he's not going to end up taking any of them at all, and then he's not going to have his simchas yom tov. He's not going to have his meat for yom tov. As opposed to, if he actually picks them up, he already went to the trouble of picking them up, then we don't assume he's going to change his mind. Or Bissell will stop you like Gazunin, whereas Bissell will say, we're not going to on any of that, because as long as he verbally designated, then that's good enough. Avol v'bricha shniya, but when it comes already to the second or later set of words, that everybody would agree, both Bishama and Basil, that just saying I'm going to take these and these is good enough, because those you don't have any particular sentimental value for, basically. You're just, you know, fine, they're another pair of birds. There's no reason why you would be expected to change your mind. Yeah.
You would change your mind just because you have pity for the birds?
Not so much pity for the birds, but it's normal. Bird breeders usually do this kind of thing. They usually leave the first pair of birds together with the parents, so the parents don't feel lonely, maybe because it stimulates them to produce more eggs. I don't know what it is exactly, but it's not just you. The Gemara has a whole discussion about it in Bava Basra as well, that for that reason, if a person sells the birds in a bird house to somebody else, and the other guy has to leave over the original breeding pair and the first pair of birds that they produce. Similar idea.
That's the first
parak,
isn't it?
It's not the first. No, it's in like the fourth or fifth parak of Bhagavad
Gita.
First parak of Bhagavad Gita, not that I know of. Now, then the question becomes like this. How about according to Basila, why do you even need to say specifically, I'm taking this bird and that one? Let him just say, I'm going to take from here. And then what happens when he ends up taking a couple of them the next day on Yom Tov, retroactively, those will be the ones that he meant all along. The chitema Basila Latlu Breira. So you're going to say maybe Basila does not hold this concept of Breira. They don't allow for this retroactive choosing.
If you said this one and this one, and then you came back later and you said, this one and that one.
No, so if you came back on Yom Tov, that would be an issue. But we're talking about, in other words, why is this all saying Bechlal? You have to say this one and this one. Just say in general, I'm taking from somewhere in this birdhouse. And then whichever pair you take is the one that you meant to. Yeah.
Good question.
Vahatanan, but we learn in a Mishnah, Hames Babayis, if you have a dead body in a house, Veloit Sochab Harbe, and the house has many different entrances, which Rashi says either all of them are open or all of them are closed. Kulun Tmeim, then all of them are Tomei, meaning if you have anything sitting in the doorway, even though the mess is on one side of the door, the keli is on the other side of the door, but the lintel of the door overhangs it. It's still considered Tomei.
Even though it's outside.
Because eventually the tumor is going to come out of one of these, is going to be brought out of one of these doors. Eventually the mess is going to be brought out of one of these doors. So therefore Rashi says, the Chachamim made a zera, that therefore anything under all the doors becomes tameh.
Under, but you said outside.
No, I'm talking about under, in other words, under the lintel. Here's the door, here's the lintel.
Right.
If the mess is in here,
right,
and you have something out here,
right,
we're saying it becomes tummy.
Oh.
Because if the door were to be opened and mess was to be brought out through this door, it would actually be passing under here, and it would be under the same oil.
If the mess is brought out.
It's the message brought out through that door. But right now, since all of them are open or all of them are closed, they all have an equal chance of the mess being brought out through them.
So it has to be that it's
no, so if some of them are open and some of them are closed, then we say only the open ones are an issue.
So you cannot say that they all the doors will make, if you have five doors and five killing, why should they all become tummy when you know that the mess is going to go
But you don't know which one it's going to be.
You don't know which one.
So therefore, it's a suffix on all of them. Actually, there's a discussion that Rav Shimon Shkop has about this in a Sefer Shara Yosher, where he asks, actually, why don't you say that the one will be bottle among all the other ones? You have, let's say, like you said, one out of five, let it be bottle, let the one be bottle in the four or five. And the answer is, he says, because you can only talk about bittul when you have one thing which is definitely off, so you just don't know which one it is, and a whole bunch of other things which are mutter, and you don't know which ones are which. Here, all of them have an equal suffix on all of them. There's nothing to be bottle in anything else. Yeah. Rashi over here is saying that it's the Chachamim made a gzeira on this. On the side over here, it brings Marav Ranshberg points out that later on in the Masechet Rashi says that it's actually Halacha Mosh Misinai. Some of the Poshim have a field day with what this is exactly. One possible answer is that the fact that whatever's under the actual door that the mess ends up coming out of, that becomes tamei, that's halacha mosh misinai. The fact that all the other ones become tamei misafik, that's the rabbanon. Anyway, yeah. Niftach achad mehen, if one of
the... Why did they make this era then?
Because we don't know which one is going to come through, and you never know.
Just by proportion?
Yeah. Niftach achad mehen, if one of the doors gets opened, hu tamei v'cholon taharim, and whatever's under the lintel of that door, which means anything that was there before, or anything which is there now, at the time the mess passes through, it becomes tameh, and everything else becomes tar. Now, so far everybody agrees to that. Choshev lo'yitzia b'echad mehen, what if the person decided mentally to bring out the mess through one of the doors, or instead of going it through a door, he decided to bring it out through a window, which is at least 4x4 tefachim. 4x4 is the minimum size you need to bring out the mess. Then that saves all the other psachim. That saves all the other entrances. Once you decided, I'm taking it out through this one, then automatically whatever's under this one, stays tar. However, Beshama says that is only if you thought of it before the mess actually died. Or Vesulim, Apishiyamasameh. In other words, if you have somebody in the house who's about to die, and you have in mind right now, before he dies, before he's metame anything, that you're going to bring him out, let's say, through the front door, then fine, the back door and the side door and all the windows and everything, anything that's under them remains tahor. But Beshama is saying, once the mess died, and this concept of tuma has now extended to all the doorways, and it's too late, until you actually carry the mess out through one of them.
Let me ask you a question. If you carry, you didn't have any intent, you carry through one door.
Yeah.
What happened to the other?
So then the other one, once you carried it through, then fine, yeah. The other,
it's fine.
Yeah. And Basil says, even after the mess died. Now, what are we, now, the assumption, the Gemara's assumption in the question is like this, that we're talking about, suppose you had, the mess died at 12 o'clock, at 1 o'clock, you decided that you're going to bring him out through the front door. So what happens to any kelim that were there between 12 and 1 under any of the other doorways? The Shammai would say there's no Bereira. You can't say at 1 o'clock, because you decided it's this door, then retroactively none of the others were tummy from 12 o'clock. No, they were all tummy from 12 to 1. Anything that you put down there after 1 o'clock by the other doors, sure, would be fine. Whereas the Silol, presumably, would be saying that there's no that we apply Bereira. At 1 o'clock, we retroactively apply it to 12 o'clock. So then that would mean that Basil holds a Breira. So how can you tell me that in our Mishnah they don't? The answer is, but they did say about this, but no, the actual Machlokas is, it's not about the time between 12 and 1. It's about anything from, it's about from 1 o'clock onward, from when you decided which door you're going to take it out of. Even after that, Beit Shammai is saying once all the doors became tamei, you need an actual maisa in order to make the rest of them tamei. That maisa would be actually carry out the mess, or at least open one of the doors to say that you're going to be carrying out the mess, not just machshava. So even after 1 o'clock, even after you decided to bring them out through the front door, nevertheless, if you put down something by any of the other entrances, it'll still be tummy. Whereas the civil is saying that no, it became tummy by machshava, it can become become tummy by machshava also, basically. So therefore, it's not an issue of brera. So they don't have to hold a brera over there. We don't have to assume that they would hold a brera over here, and that's why they say you have to actually pick out the birds ahead of time. An interesting historical sidelight on this last little thing about the doorways and the tumma, by the way. The Maharit from the one of the big Rabbanim from the times of the Beis Yosef discusses in his times the Kohenim used to be machmir that the gate of the city through which the mess is eventually going to be brought out, they would avoid going into that gate when there was a mess in town, because eventually the tumah is going to go out through that gate, and therefore they wanted to be careful based on this. So technically that's not necessary, because we're only talking about a door of a house where there's a continuous oil between the door, between the inside of the house and the outside. We're not talking about a gate of a city, let's say, where there's no oil overhead. So he mentions an interesting thing that
what
it the Maharit, Rabbi Yosef Chani. He very often argued with Rabbi Yosef on various things of halacha.
Also, his party?
Yeah, they both lived in Tzfat. Anyway, he mentions that one time he's writing to another Rav. He says you were writing quoting in the name of my father that one time there was a story where there was a mess in town on Shabbos, and that you said my father said that the Kohen is allowed to come inside because the Tumah of Oil doesn't apply on Shabbos. And you wondered, what on earth is that talking about? Tumah of Oil applies just a month on Shabbos, it's during the week. And the Maharit says, no, whoever told you the story got it wrong. What actually happened was that my father said, since this whole thing of not coming into the gate of the city is only a Chumrah, we're not going to apply that Chumrah on Shabbos because on Shabbos the mess is not going to be brought outside the city because you don't carry out Mason to bury him on Shabbos. So not that Tumas oil doesn't apply on Shabbos, but this particular Chumrah, there's no reason to apply it on Shabbos. Yeah.
I like that. Distortion.
Sengemar says, "V'chein amar Rav Oshia l'taras apsachim mekana l'abba," and so also Rav Oshia said that the machlokas v'shama v'silul about the house of mess is whether the doorways are tahor from now on, mekana l'abba ein l'makrei aloi, which means only from now on, not retroactively. So there's no matter of brera over there. Rava amar la'olam l'makrei. Rava says that no, actually, you could say that v'silul does say that the doors are tahor retroactively, meaning they do apply brera. But the reason why we're not going to allow Breda over here in the case of the birds, Dilma metalta v'shavik, because he may pick up some birds and put them down, and pick up others and put them down, become metalta midulechazile, and then he's picking up something that's not suitable for him. Meaning, ultimately, he's only going to be taking two of them, let's say. So he's picking up two to see whether they're good, and then putting them down, picking up another two, etc. So he's touching a bunch of mukta for no reason. The Gemara says, but didn't you say it is good enough so what's the point? Why would you be picking them up and putting them down? Because, for example, you pick up a pair, you figure they're fat, and then you realize they're not, so you put them down and then look for another pair that's fat. So, but we said in the Mishnah that's good enough if you're standing there and saying that I'm going to take this one and that one, which means, what happens if you're just standing there and looking at them and saying that? It means you're not checking them. So how do you know when you come on Yom Tov? You may have the same problem that you're gonna find the ones that you intended are skinny, and therefore you're gonna take other ones. Why isn't this a look concerned about that? The answer is Hani Mila Be'er of Yom Tov. You're right. We're talking about when he designates an Erev Yom Tov, means he knows already that he can only take those. He knows all the other ones are mukta, because he specifically went and designated certain ones Erev Yom Tov. So tough luck, if he comes on Yom Tov and finds that they're skinny, he's going to have to take them anyway, because he knows there's no others that he can take.
Even according to this hill.
Yeah, that's what we're saying, according to this hill.
Right.
Abba Yom Tov also, but if he comes l'chachila to take them on Yom Tov, meaning that before Yom Tov he just said generically I'm going to take from this birdhouse, but he didn't specify which one, then we're concerned. Because it may happen that the ones that he thought that at first glance looked fat are really skinny, and vice versa. And again, we're back to the point that he's gonna move ones that are not necessary, and therefore he's moving mutza. Inami, or you can even have another possibility. Zimnin dem shakli kulok choshim. He may end up finding out that all of them are skinny, v'shaviklahu, and then he'll just leave them all alone. V'osilim nui v'simchas yamtiv, and therefore he'll lose out on a simchas yamtiv. He won't have his meat for yamtiv. As opposed to, therefore, at least if he designates two specific ones, then he, or however many specific ones, then he knows I'm taking davka these, whether they're fat, whether they're skinny, whatever the situation is. This is all I have available, and therefore there's no possibility I'm not going to be moving anything else, and I'm not going to be anything.
And that's why
Basil allows it.
Very nice.
Continues the Mishnah. Zimin shchorim u'matzah levanim. If you set aside, if you designated black ones, and then came on Yom Tov and you found white ones.
It shouldn't be written with a U.
No.
It looks like man.
No, it's Zimin. You can look on the side of it. U'matzah levanim, and he found white ones, or levanim u'matzah shchorim, where he designated white ones and he found black ones. Shnayim u'matzah shloisha, where he designated two and then he ended up finding three. Asurim, then all of them are asur. Because we can't assume that those are the original ones. I mean, in the case of black and white, obviously we can't. And in the case of two and three, we can't assume that the original two are there and then a third one joined them. We have to be concerned that both the original two flew away, and these are the ones. On the other hand, shloisho mutter shnayim mutarim. But if he designated three and he ended up finding only two, then it's mutter, because then we can assume one of them flew away.
Right. Are you present to begin with?
Yeah.
Right. Two and three.
The Seicha Kain or Motzah Lifnei Kain, another case, if he designated them inside the nest and then afterwards on Yom Tov he found them outside in front of the nest, which we'll talk about in the Gemara what that means exactly, Asurim, then they're Asur, because then again we can't assume that it's the same ones because there's nothing there in the nest. These might be ones that came from elsewhere. V'im Ein Shom Elahim, but if those are the only birds around, Harelem Utarim, then they're Motzah, because obviously they must be the same ones. And that we'll learn about in the Gemara, what the situation is. I mean, on the face of it, birds can fly. What do you mean if there are none around? Inevitably, there are other birds in the area. Well, so that we'll get to in the Gemara. So the first thing, when the Mishnah had said black and white ones, pshita, I mean, it's not obvious. If you designated black ones and you found white ones, or vice versa, of course they're not the same ones. What if you designated both black and white ones? The hishkim, and then you got up early in the morning. You found the black ones in the cubby where the white ones were yesterday, and the white ones in the one where the black ones were yesterday.
In two different cubbies, two different compartments.
So ma'od teimahani inu ninu. So you might think these are actually the very same ones. V'isapuchi isapuch. They just switched places. That's the chiddush that we can't assume that. Hani ahanach azul alma. We have to assume that the original ones went elsewhere. V'hani achrin, you know, and the ones that are there now are other ones. Which, before I should point out, I mean, the point of this is that the cubbies are separated by walls. Rashi makes a point of mentioning that the cubbies are separated by walls. If they weren't separated by walls, sure, brutes can move around within their nesting area. But then there's no issue. And it's not like if you designated them on this side of the nest and tomorrow you find them on this side, you'd say they're also. But here, where there's walls in between, you can't necessarily assume that they
can still fly and go to.
They could, but there's, we can't assume that.
They have their own nest, and then they're...
And they tend to stick there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, like, in a wall, they have, like, there's multiple things.
So this is assuming that the whites were in one cubby and the blacks were in another.
That's what we're talking about.
Now, what happened if you had in one cubby both black and whites?
So then the next day he comes back and finds a black and white one, no problem. I mean, unless there's reason to think that there are other ones.
Let's say there's two whites and three blacks when he starts. And he comes back and he finds three blacks and two...
How many of them did he designate? Which ones did he designate? Those are the important ones.
He designated the whole bunch.
Well, then we're back to the problem. That it's not the same. Then you, at least one is not the same, yeah. I think what it says, Lema Messiah Rav Chanina. Can we say that what we're saying in our Mishnah supports what Rav Chanina says? The Amar Rav Chanina, Roiv V'Korov Holach Achar Roiv. That if you have a case where there's a majority there's something you're not sure where something came from. It could have come from the place where there's the majority, or it could have come from the nearby place. We had a concept about this briefly in Shkolim. We had about the money that was found about the pushkas that were there in the Beis Mikdash, where you found money between one pushka and the next, and we're not sure which one it came from. The original source for this whole concept of roiv and korov is actually in the case of Egla Rucha, which the Gemara talks about in the last parak of Sota. that what did the Torah say? If you find a dead body out in the field, you don't know who killed him, then you measure it to the closest city, and they have to bring the Eglah Rufa. So just based on that alone, we would think you always measure to the closest city. So even if you find, you know, the body is between New York and Muncie, let's say, you know, you measure if it happens to be closer to Muncie, then we assume that. Comes Reb Chanina and says, no. You have to look at the majority first. The larger city. If the closer city is smaller in population, then you can't assume that the dead body, you can't assume the person came from there. You have to assume he came from the larger city, even though it's a little further away.
How much
further
away?
I don't know. Until, you know,
50 miles.
No, I mean, we're talking that you measure to all the cities around it.
Also, you have to have a
certain
comparison of how big.
Yeah. So only if the two cities are equal in population, then you would, then the closer one brings the Eglah Rufa. That's what Reb Chanina said. So now, our Mishnah seems to support that idea. Why? Because what are we saying? That the black and the white, we had black in one cubby and white in the other cubby. We could assume that they switched around. We could also say, though, that they came from the outside world, where in the outside world there's a lot more black pigeons and a lot more white pigeons. We're saying we have to assume that that's the case. That seems to support Reb Chanina, even though it would be much easier to say that they just moved next door. But we're not saying that. Instead, we assume that ones from the outside world flew in. Why would we be assuming that? Because there's more birds in the outside world than there are in the birdhouse. The answer is not necessarily. Just like Abaya said, which we'll get to tomorrow, that we're talking about a case where there's a big ledge in front of the birdhouse. Hachanami Badaf, so the same thing over here. It could be that there's a ledge. So what's the point? The ledge is as follows. Doves are very territorial. So the pair of birds, the pair of doves that's living in this particular cubby, they don't allow strangers in that easily. But on the other hand, birds from all over are coming to this birdhouse all the time to find food and whatever. The birds that are resident there in the nest are not going to allow them in. But if there's a shelf on the outside, like a ledge on the outside, then birds from the outside will congregate on there. So therefore, what happens if the ones inside the nest leave for whatever reason? Then the outsiders will immediately go in. So therefore, it's not a matter of roiv versus karoiv. You don't have to depend on roiv from the outside world. You have other birds that are right there on the ledge. So therefore, you can't prove Reb Chanina's point. Then the Mishnah said Shnayim Amatzah Shloisha Asurim, that if you had two birds there to begin with and you found three, then they're Asur. Unless it's because Manafshach, because you have to look at it no matter how you figure. Iachrininu, Haachrininu. I mean, if they're others, if it's completely the original two flew away and these are three completely new ones, well, then they're completely new ones, they're Mokta. The Eloi Achrininu, and if they're not others, Haikachadim Arabu, then at the very least you have one Mukta bird that's mixed in with them, and they're also for that reason. And Tosfos points out, you can't say it's bottle because Dava Shiesh Lamatirin, because all of them will be Mutter after Yom Tov. We learned before about the egg that Dava Shiesh Lamatirin is never bottle. And here's Dava Shiesh Lamatirin, because it'll be Mutter after Yom Tov. On the other hand, Shloisho Mutter Shnayim Mutter, and we said if there were originally three, and then you found two now, then they're Mutter. My timer, Hani Inu Ninu, because we can assume that these are two out of the original three. The Chanminayo also Alma, and one of them flew away. Which Tosfos points out, I mean, it's still Dabar Shiesh Lamatir, and why are we being Makel? But since, after all, two are still there, then yeah, there's a logical reason to say that those are still the original two. There's no reason to think that those two are themselves are also different. As opposed to with three and two, at the very least, either you have one foreigner. And what is Lema Masnis and Rebbe Hivloi Rabbanan? Do we have to say that our Mishnah is only according to Rebbe and not according to the Rabbanan? Which would mean, Rashi says, if that were true, mean that Halacha is not like it. Because Halacha is not like Rebbe when he argues against the Rabbanan. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hiniach Mone or Matzah Matzahim. If a person left a Mone, 100 Zuz, in a box, for example, and later on he comes back and finds 200, and the money originally was, the money that was there originally was Maisa Sheni money, So now he comes back and finds twice as much. Cholin and Maisa Sheni, Rovin Zebazeh. It means that now Cholin and Maisa Sheni money are mixed together. You have to assume that the original 100 of Maisa Sheni is still there. Another 100 were dropped in. You don't know which is which now. So therefore, you know, it's all mixed together now. What do you do? Rashi says what you do is you take the better, you take the higher quality coins, and you redesignate them as Maizasheni. You say, if you know, if these are the original Maizasheni, then good, and if these are the originally the Chulin money, then I'm transferring the Kedusha of the Maizasheni money onto these, and then you use these better quality ones and you use them as Maizasheni.
Okay, figure that out. Here we say what we had.
How do you do that in our Mishnah? The other birds are mukta. Tosfos says slightly differently. Tosfos says you're not allowed to directly exchange money for money. You have to have copper in the middle, in between over there. Yeah, anyway. Divrei Rabbi, v'chamar makol chulin. Whereas the Chum say it's all chulin. Since you didn't find it the way you put it down, then don't assume the original 100 of Maizah Sheni is still there. Evidently, you must have taken away, or somebody must have taken away the Maizah Sheni money, and this is 200 of chulin. Especially because Rashi says, because people don't usually put chulin and Maizah Sheni money together. They never keep them separate. Similarly, hiniach masayim amotam mana. So now this case of 100 of leaving 100 and finding 200 is the equivalent of leaving two birds and finding three, and vice versa. Hiniach masayim amotam mana. If you left 200 of Maizah Sheni and you came back and found only 100, you have to assume mana munach mana moto, that 100 is still there from before and 100 was taken away. Divrei Rabbi, v'chamma kol cholin. Again, the Chum say the whole thing is cholin. Evidently, the whole 200 of Maizah Sheni was taken away, and what's left is 100 of cholin. So applying that to our Mishnah, the Chachamim would say, presumably then, that as far as the birds, that's fine. It's all new birds, so they're mukta, so that part we don't have a problem with. But as opposed to Rebbe would say, the original two birds are still there, and then you have a third one with them, but you don't know which one is which. But in the second case, where you left three and then you found two, Rebbe would say, fine, that the two we assume are the two left out of the original three. But the Chachamim would say, we have to assume it's two new ones, just like they're saying by Cholin and Maizah Sheni. The answer is Afilu Tamer Rabbanan. You could even say that our Mishnah goes according to the Rabbanan, because Ha'itmar Allah, because they said on this that it's not so simple. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, Da'amit Tavayu, Shiny Gozla, Toyovasu in the Dadris, that birds are different, because they walk around. Money doesn't walk. If money is taken out of the box, necessarily somebody has to have taken it out. But with birds, yeah, one of them could have wandered off on its own. So therefore, there's more reason, even according to the Rabbanan, to say that two out of the three birds are still there. As opposed to with the Maizah Sheni, there's no logical reason to assume that somebody, for example, would have taken out only half of it and left the other half. Why do you even need that answer, that birds are different because they move? We said a further discussion about this, that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar said that there's a difference between money and birds. That chad amar, one opinion is v'shnei kisin machloikus. The machloikus between Rabbi and the Chachamim is if the money was only if the money was in two different bags. But if it's in one bag, then everybody would agree that it's all chulin. Because people don't mix money. If they're in separate bags, then yeah, you could say when you put down, you had originally two bags of Maizah Sheni money in there, each one containing 100 zuz. You come back, find only one of them. Fine, there's a logical reason to say that somebody took out one bag and left the other bag there. So therefore, there's a logical reason for Rebbe to say that 100 is still for Maizah Sheni, whereas the Chachamim would say no. But if it was all to begin with in one bag, and then you come back and find one bag with only 100 zuz in it, everybody would agree it's chulin. Because why would somebody have only gone and emptied out half the bag? The other one says, on the contrary, the machloikas is where it's all in one bag. But if it's two bags, then everybody agrees that you have one mana left over of Maizah Sheni. Because again, with two bags, there's more reason to say that somebody only took one bag and left the other. So, b'shleim l'manda amar b'shnei kisin machloikas. So if you say that the machloikas there is about two bags, so then we have to say, well, two bags is the equivalent of separate birds. So then we have to say, fine. Well, you're saying the machloikas is about two bags, where Rebbe would say that fine, somebody took one bag, where Chachamim would say it's not logical, somebody took only one bag. So you would say, as opposed to birds, fine, birds can wander off individually. So therefore, everybody might agree that birds that if you only have two birds left out of three, that it really is the original two birds.
but with monies and people, they would take both.
Yes. But if you say that the machlokas is only in one bag, but if the money was in two bags and everybody agrees what's left over, it was what you see there is what's left over. So what do you even need any kind of answer about the difference between money and birds? You're saying that if in two bags there's no machlokas, and therefore birds are the equivalent of two separate bags because each one can go off on its own. So if everybody agrees when it comes to two bags that one bag could go off on its own, the same thing with birds. Everybody should agree one bird can go off on its own. So why do we even need to say that there's a difference between money and birds? Because here what we're talking about is that the birds are tied together or that the bags are tied together. So therefore, goizlus menachia dadi, birds do pull apart. So therefore, even if all three of them were tied together before Yom Tov, you can still, they're able to, this one flutters this way, this one flutters that way. They're able to break the string eventually. So therefore, yes, you can assume that one of them got away. Kisin la menachia dadi, whereas bags don't. So therefore, there's more reason to say if the two of them were tied together, then it's an all or nothing thing. And if you find one bag by itself there, then it's probably a different bag, according to the Chachamim. Rebbe Yamalach, whereas Rebbe would answer, even with bags, sometimes the knot can end up getting accidentally undone. So therefore, yes, it's still possible that originally you put in two bags tied together into the box. Later on, the knot came loose. Somebody came by, took one bag, and left the other. Which is exactly the same thing, then, as birds, where one of them could fly away and the other two could be left over there. Whereas the Chachamim would say, no, by bags, you don't assume that the knot gets loose by itself. Evidently, the bags stayed tied the whole time. Somebody took them out, and they took out everything. What to you now is something new. But on the other hand, with birds, not, we would say with birds, since they are menachiyadavi, they can pull apart from each other, then there's no reason ever to say that the two birds that are left are completely new birds.
If they're attached, it changes a lot.